Well, thank you very much to be here. Good morning. This second talk was supposed to be on impact of noise on speech comprehension and identification of the acoustic cues that are encoded and used for speech processing. So I decide to have to start with a transition with the talk, my talk on Wednesday, and then I will talk about this part. So I left you Wednesday with this idea that for theoretical models, at least of psycholinguistic, how we recognize a word, it starts as soon as the signal, the speech signal arrives, the system is going to postulate, make hypotheses about the words. It doesn't wait for anything. It just as soon as it can, it do some hypothesis, and then you're going to have competition between the different lexical candidates that are activated. And I showed you Wednesday that acoustic cues are used online to modulate the activation of the target, the word that you have to recognize, but also the competitors that are activated. What I'm first going to talk is about the work we have been doing, because this part, this second talk is supposed to be more on what we are doing now. So that's one thing we have been doing is we have been working on homophone sequence. So in French, due to elision, we have many sequences that are phonemically identical. For example, l'ami, the friend, and la, mi, the crumb. So if I say l'ami, l'ami, it sounds phonetically similar, but it doesn't mean the same thing at all, right? So you need to segmentate to find the right segmentation in order to understand the message.
May I ask a stupid question?
Yeah.
I was wondering, so do you do a slight difference in pronunciation, which is almost inaudible for anybody else, or?
You
could distinguish without context.
That's about what I'm going to talk about in detail. You will have, but first, if you ask a French person, they would say, no, we don't see the difference.
Uh-huh.
So if I mean, that's something that is very difficult when you try to talk about that in France, because people say, no, we can't make the difference. We don't make the difference. But yeah,
okay.
That's what.
Also, well, the realizations will overlap quite a lot, I suppose.
So we have fine acoustic difference between the members. So we start by doing behavioral experiment. So we took 30 of these phonemically identical pair. So if you have, c'est l'affiche. C'est l'affiche. So it's the sheet, it's a poster. Yeah? And so if we do an acoustical analysis on the 30 different pairs, you see that we find little difference in duration of the la. We find a more front articulation of the la, also the determiner la. And crucially, that because that's what I'm going to try to show you, we find a difference in fundamental frequency. And the idea is we, as you will see, we have a rise. So here you have c'est l'affiche. So that's going to be called the consonant, the vowel condition, and that's the consonant condition. The words that start with a consonant, and that's the vowel condition. So what you see, it's at the beginning as affiche, you have a rise, in fact, in the fundamental frequency that you don't really find for the determiner la, right? And that's, it's not always, I mean, you have big variability, but that's something that we find quite often. So we first just ask people Yeah, you can do it, Lafiche, but bet. Which one is it? And if we ask identification, so in dark you have when it's not ambiguous, just to make sure people are doing something that makes sense. And then you have the ambiguous pair in gray. And what you see is that at identification, they are at 75% of correct response. So they are not at chance level at all. But they have no, and even for me, even now, if someone say, I will tell you the two, which one is which, I won't be able to be sure. It's not something that we can really be sure about. And we did some discrimination, either with the same exemplar or with different production. And you see that each time it's above chance. So in fact, people are using somehow the fine acoustical difference to activate candidates. So again, we go back to this question, but does it really change the activation of the target and the competitors?
So I'm sorry, yeah? That's for French speakers, right?
Yeah.
So do you know how that would fare for non-French speakers, but for the same French student?
No. We haven't tried, but we should try, for example, for English speaker that speak French, but with the native, because you have the stress in English, so more used to use this cue more strongly. In the description of French, we are not supposed to use this kind of information. It's not supposed to be crucial. French is often described as using length of the syllable, so we have short long patterns. Chapeau. We do little chat and big paw.
And so, what if you take, you know, like 10,000 recordings?
I don't know.
I think one of the difficulties in that case is to take advantage of measuring length. Uh-huh. So there are segmental approaches where you explicitly take into account where you can have like segmental features, mm-hmm. especially like length features, which would have to be used in that case in an explicit way, which are not really explicit when you do like in Markov rules, for example. So you have transition probabilities to go from one state to the next, but that part of the model is not as elaborate as the acoustic probabilities. If at all, it would only be modeled in a more implicit way.
And just to, also I was saying that people are not aware, but children are very bad if we think about the learning. Children are very, very bad at that. I mean, until 5 years old, they still do errors. So they will spend their time just, they don't get at the, you know. Un ours, a bear, we say un ours, the word is ours, and they will say le nours. So they always take the syllable. And so this kind of error are just all over until 4, 5. So it's not easy to, it's something that it's quite difficult for children to learn.
I have another question at this point. Usually disambiguation of homophones also very much relies on context.
Yeah.
So do you also talk about that?
No, I'm not going to talk about that. It's true that it can be the case, but you see like Lafiche, I mean, the context, I mean, it's...
I mean, you can certainly like look at this short utterance in isolation, but usually it would possibly be embedded in a longer...
No, it's true that would help.
The interesting question would be, so to what extent does like prosody and word length contribute in this case? And to what extent does context contribute to this ambiguation?
I will show you experiment, and it's supposed to be the next step, but we haven't done it on EEG, but yeah.
So is this language specific? Are you aware? I think it happens to some extent in other languages as well.
Yeah. No, I don't think it's not language specific. I mean, you have, in every language, you can have sequence that don't, like, I think there is a paper in English, like tulips. Seems that some people, if you pronounce, you can have tulips. I remember this example. I don't give British English example because it doesn't make sense.
There's very simple examples in English, like 2-2-2.
2-2-2, yeah. Oh, yeah.
The pronunciation, for my knowledge
on
English,
but
it's actually the same.
So I never thought about it, but it contradicts the definition of the phoneme, right? It's contradictory to the standard textbook definition of a phoneme. Its phoneme is the smallest unit that disambiguates meaning. And
yeah.
Here, it apparently doesn't.
You're right.
You need to change your language-specific phoneme definition.
Yeah, it could be. No, you're right. It could be, yeah, because there are some information that are used. So we could change the phoneme slightly to pick up this difference.
As the carrier of information and length. Yeah.
So we want to look at what effect it had on the target, but also on the two type of words. So for that we use priming, so we present auditorily either l'affiche or l'affiche. So l'affiche or l'affiche. And la mer, something that is not related. And then visually, you see either fish or a fish, and you have to say if it's a word or not, a lexical decision I talk about. Like that, we can see how long it takes to recognize that and to see if it will take, it will be shorter with la fish before, with la fish compared to la mer, which is a baseline. And what you have here is a priming effect, so that the subtraction of the time it takes compared to the condition where it's not related. And what you see is that you have priming, so it goes faster, whatever is a prime. But the priming effect is bigger for the intent segmentation, so for the vowel. So for la fish, we'll prime more la fish than la fish, yeah? And reverse. However, even if the priming is greater, what you see is that acoustic cues are not powerful enough to rule out the alternative hypothesis. So as we were talking about the other day, we keep in mind that we could be wrong, definitely. So one big issue with all this experiment is that usually it takes like one production, that we choose carefully to have something clean. And you have always this question about the task. You are asking people to focus on the signal, and that could change the effect. So we did an EEG experiment, an event-related potential, using event-related potential and using the mismatch negativity, which is quite a nice tool to study language. I can give you I'm supposed to submit the paper next week, I think, hopefully. So the mismatch negativity is nice because you have no task, so you just sit the person, you put the electrode and they watch a movie with no sound, and you just put the sound and they have nothing to do. They can just watch the movie and that's it. It's a frontocentral negative wave that peaks between 100 and 300 milliseconds after the deviant onset. And so it's going to detect an unexpected change in some aspect of a regular auditory stream. So usually we use an oddball paradigm, so where you have one sound that is repeat and then a deviant. So we call the standard. So the standard is repeat. It's supposed to be 80% of the time, the standard. And then you change a little and you can see if the system detects the change. What is nice, so it's that the MMN is the reflection of the formation of a sensory memory trace for statistical regularity in the input signal. And in fact, it's going to map the signal into more abstract representation. So it's not going to pick up any differences. It's going to try to find the regularities. So for example, in what I'm going to show you, we did the la, 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 but we use different production of the same la, coming from the same word, and then put a la coming from the other production. Yeah? But we add variability of the production by itself. And it's supposed, and more it's interpreted in the predictive models with this idea that it's going to reflect the fail of the prediction of the system. That in fact, from the memory trace, the system is going to make prediction about what is coming next. And what it's going to be pick up is the difference with the expectation. So we use different production of the two la. I'm not going into detail, but we had little variability. And so as I was saying, we had standard, donc la, 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 different production of the la coming from the same word. And in deviant, we had either the homophone la coming from the other word or something very different to make sure, again, that the paradigm is working well. And or, again, the same la, just to make sure that in that case, nothing happened. We did two experiments, one with the CV, with the syllable, and one with the words. Directly. So here you have another example, la locution. And the phonologically different, l'illocution.
Sorry, so
the standard would be la locution and the TV would be the locution. Yeah. And you have to strongly believe in your hypothesis because it's different production to make sure we have variability and to see if the system is able to get the value. Yeah, what you mean?
But there's a pitch change. There's a difference in the pitch.
So in the la from affiche, you have a rise in the F fundamental frequency, and I will show you, we think that's one of the main cues they're using. In the other, you don't have this, it's...
But in this example you gave, yeah. La locution, c'est la locution ou la locution, je ne sais pas.
We counterbalance everything. We had a first block, second block, and we counterbalance depending on the subject.
So these two alternatives, they don't have any difference in stress?
Yes, they do.
They do, okay.
They do. They have like... they have this kind of thing. So when you have L, when it's starting with a vowel, you have a little rise, the F0 is always higher, and it's not the case when it's a determiner, la. And so, you have this difference, you see, so it's not on the 30 pairs.
But you are now investigating a neural correlate of this changing. What is, if you would do a, let's say, a behavioral, a turn to forced choice task, so where you have three intervals, one is different from the others in terms of one is la fish versus the other two la fish. Or wouldn't that be easier, more direct to see what people can, as a...
Yeah, but what I was... Yeah, but we did that, but as I was telling in the review of the article, a big question is always, yes, but then you are focusing, you are asking the person to focus on the form of the word, and the task, maybe your results are only due to the fact that you're forcing the person to focus, but then it won't happen in real...
I know for me, like, I always start second-guessing, and I'm like, oh, wait, it must be the other one, because I'm thinking it's that one.
Yes. Yeah, but okay, here you're saying there's no task, but isn't it normally you are focused on trying to discover?
Well, not on the form, but that's why it's the beginning, so I don't have the experiment, but we did this one, and then what we want to do after is to put the same stimuli in sentences to look if we keep the effect we observe. Because when it's the same, coming from the same words, you have no MMN. So the MMN is a good tool. The intra-speaker variability is not picked up by the system as something that is different. And I will show you in the homophone condition, we have clear MMNs, both in the syllable experiment and in the nominal sequence syllable, nominal sequences, despite the variability of the standard tokens. So it's not only, the MMN is not picking up only acoustic change. So I will try to make it clear. So here you have the syllable experiment, here you have the word experiment. So each time I was telling you there is a la as a deviant or the other la as a deviant. As you see, we have an MMN each time, but as you see, we have difference in the MMNs. To talk about that, so in red, you have the deviant là, and what you see is that it's more negative. So higher it is, more negative it is. So it's in both experiments, it's higher, it's stronger, which that we interpret that as the idea that in fact, when you have L, here you have the rise of the fundamental frequency, and that could be make a stronger trace in memory. And because you have a stronger trace, the prediction will be stronger, so when it fails, it makes a higher MMN. Okay? And so that's the first thing. And then if you look at the latencies, you see that in that case, the red one come first, while in the word experiment it comes after. But at the same time, what you see is why they are very central, frontocentral for these three cases. In that case, it become more left lateralized. And in fact, it seems that it's becoming syntactic, like what they call an MMN, syntactic MMN, that in this case, when you have la locution as a standard, it will recognize the la, the determiner, which is one of the most frequent determiners. So it's going to start, as Federici would postulate, for example, that the syntactic information is start to be already processed. Yeah?
It's more technical. So what do you get on the left? It's the amplitude of this, whatever.
Yeah, it's just.
On the right, or this,
amplitude, it's a change. compare, you have baseline, basically. And
right, but this is for one electrode, or this is for...
No, it's for a group of electrodes. Yeah, it's a group of electrodes. We group. I show you that after if you want. I show you the detail. How we do. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. No,
sorry.
Okay. A couple questions. First of all, so what if you just did like tone MMM, you know, high frequency, low frequency? Would the dynamics be even shorter, or would they be similar to the top panel?
I don't know. We don't. I don't know any paper on that. I'm looking.
Right. So I guess it looks like someone in the Natanen.
No, definitely must. But I didn't. I mean, it's always difficult when you compare to non-speech because we don't have exactly the same.
The timing.
Yeah.
Right, and I guess that's so. There's actually a difference occurring very early in the bottom panel, though, right? And so, when does the word actually occur with respect to?
At zero.
So it starts. And how long is it?
Oh, how long? It's like it's like a 300.
What is represented by the yellow region here?
It's where the MMN is supposed to be between 100 and 300. So that's the window we're analyzing.
That's not related to the production.
No. It's related to the dynamics of the MMN.
The series of standard sounds, is it then a different realization?
It's not the same.
Okay. And it should be difficult, right, to discriminate.
Yeah.
So I'm also, because I know that from non-speech stimuli, we see this mismatch negativity, but it is typically the threshold is typically the buff is higher than the behavioral detection threshold. So if you have a stimulus series and then you present another stimulus, which is where you can detect, then you typically see a mismatch negativity, but this sensitivity is, as of mismatch negativity, is not as good as our behavioral detection.
Okay.
So I'm just trying to understand what how. So would you say that people, that they're non-French people, that they would not show a difference because they cannot perceive it, or is it there because...
Well, that's a good question. We should do it because we are interpreting it because we have la. It's a determiner. It's very strong. You make a very strong... So indeed, if we ask, we do the task with someone who is not French, we should not... See this inversion, for example.
Even though the input symbol is the same, but they cannot perceive it, and therefore you say it's also reflected in this mismatch negativity, kind of a perceptual.
But the thing is, it's exactly the same stimuli between line. The la here are the la from here, and so the idea after is to put that in sentences and to look at the N400 to see if this difference is still pick up. While the context help to disambiguate.
I mean, the assumption or the hypothesis should be in that case, if you have a non-native speaker, never French, the difference between la locution et la locution would be not memorable, I suppose.
Yeah.
Possibly the response presumably should be the same as the upper one.
Yeah, I guess.
So it still reflects some acoustic difference, not the semantic.
Yes, it would be good. Normally, one could see up to some, let's say, brainstem or primary auditory cortex, normally one would see a difference if it's a difference in the stimulus. But maybe at some point, it just reflects more a sensory behavioral correlator.
So up to 400 milliseconds is a big difference between the two.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's when, does that reflect comprehension of the word? I mean, because you don't get that.
No, and we haven't analyzed, so I don't know the variabilities. Okay, so I'm not going to go into big detail to finish that, but then after that we thought, okay, what we really need is to really, because I'm telling you it's the fundamental frequency, but just a hypothesis, I mean, so we try to use resynthesized version So we had l'affiche, l'affiche, and we use l'affiche A, and we resensitize it to reach the fundamental frequency of the other one, l'affiche. And then we create also a low one and a very high one. So I'm not going anywhere, because we won't have time. But just to show you that in that case, so you have the natural production, and the that give you the number of answer for affiche.
Could you shortly say what we see here? So the percentages are what?
The answers for l'affiche, affiche,
okay.
Affiche. And you hear l'affiche, and the right answer is affiche. I know it's just very confusing.
So both the input and the output is so the input always is affiche.
Yeah. No, input we change sometimes. It's.
But I mean, so what would be?
So that the percentage of vowel choice. And basically, you have the natural production here. So when it's when what you present have this is A, it's l'affiche. When it's B, is l'affiche. And C, it's when you raise A to B.
But my question is, so the word, so the original recording is affiche.
Yeah. Okay. You have the two. You have l'affiche and l'affiche. You have the two natural recording. But then we are manipulating this one, okay. L'affiche, and we try.
But then on the next slide, you only show results for case A then, right?
So I give you, when we play A, each of the condition, the percentage of answer affiche. And it's just to show you that basically when you raise the fundamental frequency here to of one natural stimuli to be as high as the other, you raise the number of answers, but still you don't reach the so it means they are using something else. And also when you take the fundamental frequency down, it doesn't change. So it seems there is very there is really something about going higher. And actually we think it's a rise of fundamental frequency.
Can you go back to the spectrogram?
This one?
The one that shows what the different synthesized. Yeah, that one. Yeah.
So the
best approximation was
C.
Okay. So A is still
out. So A is l'affiche natural. B is affiche natural. So that's the true natural. Then we raise A to B with C. So we take the mean of the fundamental frequency and we straight, I think we use straight. I mean, we had a psychoacoustician that was doing that, who helped us with the choice we have to do, we have to make on this point. And then we had a very high one, that we double the difference, and one low.
Sorry, just a very basic question. So relative to the contours are supposed to represent F0, right?
The line, yeah?
Yeah, the lines. Yeah. But the spectrogram has energy bands at, you know, like at hundreds of, so are those like subharmonics of the F0?
Yeah,
it's
a Forman. Oh,
so F0 is a Forman.
That's the Forman.
Sorry,
yeah. Okay, so now just... So that's something we are doing for a long time now. So we're keeping trying to make in context and trying to understand how it works. The last thing I wanted to talk about, so we reached this idea that we really need to study each acoustic cue more precisely, and that we have to find, because I think we have to find which cues are more important than the other. And for example, for us, it seems clear that the rise in fundamental frequency is very important, but that when it's going down, it's much less important. The system doesn't seem to mind or to pick up that for some reason. So with a student who was a... So there is a series of paper. So Leo Varney, he was a student of mine, and he did a PhD with me. And he's an engineer. And what was the idea was to try to do an ear tracker on the same way we have eye tracker. We can know exactly where the eye is looking in the picture. We want to know which exactly in the signal the person is picking up information. So also with Michel Hoehn, we decide to use a classification image that is a method used in visual modality. And the idea is you have a stimulus here, Gabor Bondlage, and then you put noise, and then you ask the person, is the target here or not? And then by analyzing which part of the signal, what influenced the answers, you can decide which part exactly of the target is necessary to detect the fact that it's here. So the student adapt this to speech, and we start with a very basic experiment where we knew the answer, basically. So we ask people to make the difference between ABBA and ADA. The A was the same, and we just changed BA and DA, and to see where they were supposed, what they are picking up to make the difference between B and D. So we had noise, he had noise, additive Gaussian noise. So, yeah, that's not. So the SNR was moving. So the idea was we keep the correct response rate for 75%. So the idea is if we compute the ideal template matcher, so that is doing the optimal strategy, just looking for the region where the target differs most in terms of energy, we should find the effect somewhere here. But if we follow all the literature on the topic, like Lieberman, the difference between B and D is on the second formant, so here. Yeah? So we...
Why do they have this in the literature? Shouldn't they get the same result if they have been...
Well, that's one production first. You know, it's
for that specific.
Yeah, for it may be not general, but for that specific. But in general, the difference between D and B is on the formantic transition. And what we found is that's our first classification, auditory classification image. What you see, and indeed we have this F2, what we were supposed to find, F2 activation. So we use as the kind of image, we try to make the kind of image we are using in fMRI, okay? But So in red, you have the place where the signal is necessary to say b. And in blue, you have the acoustic cue necessary to say d. Okay? So what we found is this F2. Cues, that's very important. But what was surprising is that the information used also the first syllable, even though in our signal you had no useful acoustic cue. So we were thinking maybe it's because, in fact, to evaluate this, the system needs some references, and so it's trying to find something to compare. And so this is working very well. Well, clearly the problem is that we have, you need to do categorization. It's 10,000 trials, so you make people come back. So he worked 3 years, he optimized and tried to make better, but we're still constrained because it's quite heavy. But you can see where people pick up information. And what we did after was to try to look for profile, so strategy of listening. And I'm going to finish on that. Yeah?
Yeah, if you go back one, can you go back one?
Yeah.
The problem with using white noise for this is that it has uniform intensity everywhere. And then if there are fainter or stronger pieces of the sonogram because of the average mm-hmm. spectrum, you would tend to mask much more easily the high frequency part than the low frequency part. And naturally, when you raise the noise, okay, the only thing that is left is the low frequency always. Have you tried using a noise that's matched in spectrum to the syllables you're using?
No.
So that you can equally well mask any okay. part of the syllable?
No. But I come to talk to you.
Okay.
Yeah. So what we did some, well, so I'm going to make that short, but dyslexic, I use dyslexic in my grant. I was telling it's great. Dyslexic, they have a language impairment, but nothing. Hearing is perfect, no problem with hearing. You know, they don't have listening problem. And I had a big grant, and I start like that, but it appears that the dyslexics are always, they can't work in noise. They are very, even if there is nothing to read, nothing to write, you ask them to repeat a word in noise, it's more difficult for them. And I'm not talking about difficult dyslexic, I'm taking a student, so people who manage school, who are not badly dyslexic. And so it appears that in fact they have big difficulty in noise, but as psycholinguists always study in silence, nobody saw that really, so it was not very documented. So anyway, so we did some fMRI, and indeed we found very strong right compensation in some conditions for the dyslexic compared to normal. I could show you if you're interested. And for the, to come back and to finish on the auditory classification image, we try, so that was a DAGA, ADA, ALDA, ALGA contrast, and we ran on the classification, auditory classification image, a group of control that show a pattern. We try a group of musician and a group of dyslexic, and what you see first, so the SNR is adapting. They are always at 75%. So what you see in blue here, you have the control, you have the dyslexic, and you have the musician. So the musicians are better.
So none of the musicians were dyslexic.
No. We make sure they are not dyslexic. And
none of the dyslexics were musicians.
No, that's easy one. But in fact, it's easy. Dyslexics don't do music. No, they don't like music.
That's not true at all. One of my best childhood friends is
dyslexic,
and he's a professional musician in LA.
Because we had all the dyslexic, we had none of them were doing music on 20.
Maybe he's an exceptional case, but I mean, I have at least one data point that that's very not true.
But it depends. He's maybe.
Perhaps. Yeah, no, but he could barely read as a child because his dyslexia was so bad. But he's.
But maybe, yeah, but maybe he's like this kind of. There is a very. Subgroup of dyslexic who are very attentional, only attentional, so maybe, but the one... But
he's also a drummer, so you could also argue he's not a musician.
Okay.
He clearly doesn't
have time. Pay attention. There's one next to you.
Yeah.
And so, the control, what we see, they have all the same strategy, they use the same cues. However, it's clear when you analyze that the musicians are more focused, so they are more. It's more always the prediction you can make from one image to the other is much stronger with the musicians. They're really more on the main cues, and the dyslexic, in fact, as you see, it's more blurry. And in fact, if you look at their individual image, you see that some of them just. I have no idea. After 10,000 trials, they just, you don't know how they do the task. So it appears that it's very, they have difficulties to pick up cues, in fact, in the signal as soon as it's at its.
Do you have the same question for musicians?
Yeah, I don't have it here, but I can. Give you, and it's very clean because they are much, they are very good at picking up always the same cue. Actually, the problem is, as I was saying, for dyslexic is more difficult. I mean, they come back 4 times and the noise, they get headaches. It was not very nice to do that to them because in addition, it's already long and quite painful, but then, for them, it has been very difficult. So, okay, so that's what we are working on, and we are working on. I had a paper accepted yesterday on speech in nerves and executive function, which is linked to see how the executive function and the capacity to anticipate, inhibit, and focusing and. Is all these functions are linked to the way we manage speech and noise. And my plan was to try to do some training to see if we can increase the capacity to understand speech and noise, at least temporarily. Thank you very much. That's Léo Varnet, he's a student, and he's now doing a postdoc chez Christian Lorenzi, à Paris. Voilà, voilà. Thank you.